This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Terror in New Zealand. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Friday, March 15. Thank you for joining us. Here's what's up this hour.
Dozens of people have been killed after mass shootings at a couple of mosques in the city of Christchurch, New Zealand. Authorities have arrested four people.
The Senate has passed a resolution rejecting President Trump's national emergency declaration at the southern border. A veto is expected.
As Boeing suspends further deliveries of its 737 MAX aircraft, the U.S. Air Force has raised concerns about another Boeing project.
And as fallout continues from the college admissions scandal, a look at how schools need to address it.
People out there have heard many, many narratives over time about the way the university admissions process occurs. And the first thing that you really need to understand if you're going to respond to a situation like this is, does this tap into an existing narrative that people have about you, or is this something brand new? In this case, I think people feel like it exists. It makes it that much harder to respond.
Corporate communications expert Michael Meslansky joins us to discuss crisis PR in about 10 minutes. At least 49 people have been killed in a terror attack in New Zealand. A mass shooting took place at two mosques in the city of Christchurch. The New Zealand police said three men and one woman are in custody in connection with the attack, and a number of improvised explosive devices were discovered in nearby vehicles. They were defused. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said the suspects were not on any terror watch lists.
You may have chosen us, but we utterly reject and condemn you.
Investigators did not rule out that more gunmen could be involved in Friday's attack.
We have undoubtedly experienced an attack today that is unprecedented, unlike anything that we have experienced before.
Police were also working to remove an online video that showed a gunman entering a mosque and firing an apparent live stream of the attack. Authorities say one of the suspects, a 28-year-old Australian man, published a 74-page anti-immigrant manifesto prior to the killings. They say he traveled to New Zealand to train and then commit the attack. Back here at home, as expected, the Senate has now passed a measure rejecting President Trump's emergency declaration at the southern border. Following the same move by the House, a dozen Senate Republicans joined Democrats yesterday to rebuke the president, including Rob Portman of Ohio.
Although there's a crisis at our southern border, we are not in wartime, and there are funds available to address border security.
Mr. Trump has promised a veto, the first of his presidency. Since two-thirds of Congress is required to override the veto, there doesn't appear to be the votes. Texas Congressman Joaquin Castro.
I realize that the president is very likely to veto this bill, this resolution. We look forward to the opportunity to try to rally votes to override that veto.
The resolution was to terminate the president's declaration, which was part of a White House plan to secure $6.7 billion to build more barriers on the border with Mexico. Congress recently appropriated less than $2 billion. The vote came one day, by the way, after the Senate also passed a resolution to withdraw U.S. forces in Yemen, which Mr. Trump is also expected to veto. Two more negative developments for Boeing in the wake of its second deadly crash of a 737 MAX jetliner. First, the company announced it's suspending deliveries of any more of that aircraft after regulators around the world grounded it. However, Boeing says it will continue production. President Trump is hopeful the suspension is over quickly.
It's a big decision. It's also one of our largest exporters. One of the truly great companies of the world. They have to figure it out fast. They know that. They're under great pressure.
Also, a senior Pentagon official indicated yesterday that the U.S. Air Force has lost confidence in Boeing's ability to maintain quality control over a new aerial refueling tanker it's building. Boeing delivered the first of the KC-46A Pegasus tankers in January, more than a year late, after a series of production and design problems left the aerospace company with $3.5 billion in losses on the initial $4.9 billion contract. By the way, shares in the company are off 12% since an Ethiopian Airlines flight crashed shortly after takeoff last Sunday, killing all 157 on board. It's 11 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Fallout from the college admissions scandal continues. Actress Lori Loughlin has been dropped from the TV program Garage Sale Mysteries, and her daughter has lost a sponsorship with the Sephora cosmetics chain. Meanwhile, the scandal is rocking the foundation of higher ed. What should the universities involved be saying or doing? We're joined now by Michael Maslansky, corporate communication strategist and CEO of Maslansky & Partners in New York City. Michael, your initial reaction?
Well, I think I thought what many people thought, which is, wow, it doesn't sound that far off from what we might expect from universities these days.
All right, so then let's imagine that Yale, Georgetown, Southern Cal, Stanford come to you and say, fix this. What do we do, Michael?
Well, so I think, you know, the first thing is recognizing where the public is on an issue like this. And so the reaction like the one that I just said comes about because people out there have heard many, many narratives over time about the way the university admissions process occurs. And the first thing that you really need to understand if you're going to respond to a situation like this is, does this tap into an existing narrative that people have about you, or is this something brand new? In this case, I think people feel like it exists. It makes it that much harder to respond. And the question that many universities were facing is, okay, do we respond or do we say nothing? And if we're going to respond, what's the nature of that response? Do we go slowly and act carefully? Do we show humanity? Do we take a kind of a corporate approach, an overly lawyered approach? And if you look at the statements of many of the different universities, you see that they've approached this in many different ways, and some have done a much better job than others have.
All right, like who, for example, has done a much better job versus something different you'd like to see from another school?
Yeah, well, so I think, first of all, there's still a lot of work to be done to try and insert themselves in the narrative and define the debate here, right? So what they've all done is put out statements, and some of them have been a bit more active than others. The ones who have done it well, so Stanford, I think, is the university whose statement has been the most effective. It is the most human. They say that they're appalled by what has happened. They are very demonstrative in terms of what they will and will not tolerate, what they think has happened here. They are very clear about actions that they've already taken and that they plan to take. On the other end of the spectrum, you've got universities, Yale being one of them, that said, well, we think we're a victim here, has basically avoided taking any responsibility. Now, while they may not have been directly responsible as the administrators, they are certainly either are responsible or will be held responsible by the public for creating an environment where something like this is even possible. And so the fact that they're trying to avoid responsibility, play the victim card, is likely to hurt them pretty significantly.
We're speaking with Michael Maslansky, corporate communication strategist, also CEO of a company called Maslansky and Partners. He's based in New York City, talking about the college admissions cheating scandal and how schools can now try to manage this crisis. This won't be the last of it, I presume, because I think this guy, Rick Singer, claimed to have helped hundreds of kids get into schools. So if this is going to be one of those stories that trickles out drip by drip, how does a school manage that any differently?
Well, I think there are a couple different ways to look at that. So if you are a school that thinks that there are going to be more stories about this that come out, it's even more important to be out there and trying to communicate that, to try and say that you anticipate that there are other things, to actively investigate on your own in addition to whatever the authorities may be doing, and to try and get ahead of the story. Now, the problem with that still is that the public isn't going to necessarily appreciate the fact that all of these things happened before this initial story broke, and so one of the challenges that they'll face is, you know, how they manage this drip, drip, drip. I think in some ways the more interesting challenge is for universities that are not directly implicated in this. What do they do? Because, you know, we are in the public, as we read news stories, we may see certain names in the headlines, but we paint with a broad brush. We are going to hold all universities now accountable to a certain extent for having created this environment that we're reading about here. And so if I were in a university that didn't think that I had a problem, I'd be thinking about what I want to say about this, what I want to do about this anyway, so that I'm not put into that bucket with everybody else.
Thanks, Michael. That is Michael Meslansky, corporate communications strategist and CEO of Meslansky & Partners in New York City. By the way, lawsuits have started as well here with students seeking refunds on things like application fees to schools that rejected them. 21 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Reported mass shootings at two mosques full of worshippers attending Friday prayers killed at least 49 people on what the prime minister called one of New Zealand's darkest days, as authorities detained four people and defused explosive devices in what appeared to be a carefully planned racist attack. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says the events in Christchurch represented an extraordinary and unprecedented act of violence as she denounced the attackers.
These are people who I would describe as having extremist views that have absolutely no place in New Zealand and, in fact, have no place in the world.
A man who claimed responsibility for the shootings described anti-immigrant views in a manifesto. More than 20 people were seriously wounded. Israeli warplanes attacked militant targets in the southern Gaza Strip early today in response to a rare rocket attack on the Israeli city of Tel Aviv, as sides appear to be hurtling toward a new round of violence. The rocket attack Thursday night caught the Israeli military off guard and marked the first time that Tel Aviv has been targeted since a 2014 war. And though the attack caused no damage or injuries, it was a significant escalation. A dozen Republicans joined Senate Democrats to block the national emergency that President Trump declared so he could build his border wall with Mexico. Republican Senator Rob Portman explained why he voted in favor of the resolution.
Congress, not the president, has the sole authority to determine how to spend taxpayer money. And that's appropriate.
Moments after the vote, the president tweeted a single word, veto. We're starting to learn a little bit more about the South Carolina person who won $878 million in the biggest Mega Millions jackpot payout to one winner in U.S. history. The winner was a woman who knew she won the morning after the drawing but didn't claim the winning ticket for 131 days because she wanted to research lawyers and financial planners who could help her stay anonymous and manage her newfound wealth. She's already donated money to several charities, including the City of Simpsonville Art Center, Hurricane Relief, the Ronald McDonald House, and the Red Cross.
Boy, on a related note, the Powerball is like $495 million for Saturday night's drawing.
Never ends.
Huge jackpots. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. There are new ways to say goodbye. While many still turn to the funeral rites that have comforted generations, others, led by baby boomers, are taking a different approach than their parents and grandparents. It's a story by Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry. Claire, what have you seen?
There's a shift away from the real traditional funeral rituals. Not that they are going away. There's always going to be a funeral, the traditional funeral, for people who want that sort of ritual, the sacred ritual. But what's happening is, well, first of all, you see the baby boomers who have always been sort of counterculture and wanting something different than their parents and grandparents. There's a real focus on the personal as opposed to the ritual of religion. You know, a lot of people want something that is very distinct for their loved ones and not a ritual that everyone has. And also the rise in cremations, which makes it gets rid of the boundaries and the restrictions. So people can have services months after someone has passed, and you could have them on a mountaintop, you could have them on board a yacht. So that gives a little bit more leeway.
I know it's largely to each his own, it appears, with this stuff, but I did notice one person's comment in your story who said, okay, you're going to have a memorial ceremony several months from now. That puts my grief on hold, which I thought was interesting.
Yes, yes. And you know, there's a lot of feeling that, you know, that the rituals are really important. You know, if you've lost somebody and you're totally lost, you're in a fog, especially if a death was unexpected, it's good to have something, some sort of guidance on what you should do next. And the whole funeral or memorial service is a real important part of grieving. And so, you know, the feeling is, you know, when somebody dies, we need a process. We need to be able to grieve right away, not 3 months from now. And, it, you know, in some of the comments section, it was really interesting. People were saying, you know, an adult child may not live in the community where their parents died. So they kind of come in, take care of everything, or have something months later, or have a private dinner at, you know, a country club or a hotel or something. And, you know, the parents' friends out in the community are kind of left with, like, well, wait a minute, you know, aren't we going to do something? There's a real importance on the community farewell and the community grieving process. And people say that, you know, you don't forget that. Don't make it so personal that you forget that there's a whole community that's grieving.
Thanks, Claire. Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ensberry. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Day one for a new employee. Instead of joining in productively, they face a confusing, disjointed process and piles of paper forms. With Kronos, you can automate the entire onboarding process, creating a better experience for employees and freeing you to focus on the human part of your job. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/onboarding. Kronos. Workforce innovation that works.
Catch America's First News online anytime at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.
Glad you're with us. Welcome into Friday, March 15. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Dozens killed in terror attacks at mosques in New Zealand. Congress passed a resolution rejecting the president's national emergency at the southern border. Rocket attacks on Tel Aviv, and Israel responds with warplanes hitting Hamas targets. In the wake of the college admissions scandal, actress Lori Loughlin dropped from a TV show. Her daughter loses a sponsorship. McDonald's introduces vegan nuggets in Norway. And the 6-year-old blind boy who's gone viral for his piano skills. That story in about 20 minutes. A new federal budget and a new national defense strategy have the Army and the nation's other military services angling to carve out a slice of the budgetary pie and ensure their relevance in the Pentagon's newfound strategic focus on Russia and China. More from Carlo Munoz, military correspondent at the Washington Times. Carlo, what are we seeing?
For the first time, probably since, you know, the months and years after 9/11, we've seen terrorism not taking sort of the top spot as far as priorities are concerned. But the top spot is now sort of replaced by the threat posed by Russia and China. Now, the thing with the budget is that the military, probably since the, you know, throughout the post 9/11 era, has been kind of financing weapons and programs specifically to address the terrorism threat. So this is, as they say, sort of trying like to turn an aircraft carrier. It's gonna turn, but it's gonna take some time.
All right. So does this become Army versus Navy versus Air Force here in a battle?
In a way, yes. Because if you look at sort of the threats that are posed by Russia and China, we're not talking about, you know, open conflict. You know, this is a lot of posturing, a lot of sort of force presence, and, you know, specifically with China. And in the Asia-Pacific theater, it's almost all dominated by naval forces. So we can see the sort of a maritime presence requirement there. With Eastern Europe, same sort of situation with the maritime presence, but there's also a heavy air presence as far as, you know, flying bombers and fighters through international airspace near Russian airspace, kind of showing American presence there. So, you know, from a strategic point of view, it really is very air and maritime dominated. Now, the Army needs to find a way to kind of get its seat at the table, so to speak. They do a lot of training with Eastern European forces. They also do some of the same thing in the Pacific. But as far as having that large kind of inherent responsibility in this new kind of age that we're seeing here at the Pentagon, they're really going to have to kind of redefine themselves.
We're speaking with Carlo Munoz, military correspondent at the Washington Times. So what does the Army say on its behalf in this situation?
So the Army, in this particular budget, which came out this week, is really trying to define themselves as kind of multi-domain operations based, which means, you know, they're sort of moving away from the typical, you know, row of columns and troops kind of moving down towards an objective, something you'd see probably in, you know, World War II, Korea, yeah, a little bit in Vietnam, and more towards kind of integrating all areas of modern-day warfare, which includes cyber warfare, information warfare, influence operations. These are all things that the Chinese and the Russians have done incredibly well in places like Crimea, in the Pacific. You've seen this sort of come and play in areas near in North Korea. So that's what the Army is kind of, you know, that's its biggest selling point, that they are the largest service. They do have sort of the manpower and the know-how, arguably, to do this. So, you know, that's kind of more, and you're seeing more investment in that in this budget.
All right. So this is going to sound like an extreme question. It's not meant to be that way, but mm-hmm. in some ways, is the Army trying to justify its existence in the new world?
You know, I wouldn't go so far as to say justify its existence, because, you know, being the largest and most powerful army in the world does still carry a lot of credence in the international sort of community and amongst U.S. allies. However, I think it's not in its existence, but it needs to modernize, which is what Army officials love to say. You know, they need to kind of, you know, modify their doctrine, their strategy, all the way down to how their troops move, shoot, and communicate differently to adapt to a very technological battlefield, which arguably the Air Force and the Navy kind of already have a leg up on them in doing.
Thanks, Carlo. Carlo Munoz, military correspondent at The Washington Times. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well at Gordon Deal. 21 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday. In a new survey by Bankrate.com, 21% of working Americans report they aren't saving any money at all. And only 1 in 6 are saving the minimum 15% of their income that most experts recommend. Analysis from Greg McBride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate. Greg, what's up?
Well, despite the fact that the economy's gotten better and over the last several years, more people are working, people are finally making more money, we're not seeing the needle move when it comes to savings. 1 in 5 working Americans aren't saving anything, nothing. And, you know, that's not to say that everybody else is doing a great job. You know, there's still about another half of Americans that are saving, but saving a token amount. Really, only about 1 in 4 Americans are at the other end of the spectrum and actually saving an adequate amount, saving more than 10% of their income. So, yeah, you've got a fourth of working Americans aren't saving anything at all, a fourth that are saving over 10% of their income, and half of working Americans right there in the middle, putting some money away, but not enough to reach those financial goals.
So the 1 in 5 saving nothing, that's no emergency slush fund, no retirement, no college savings, nothing?
Exactly. And, you know, what happens is if you're not saving anything, a couple of things are happening. You're one financial catastrophe away from having to incur high-cost debt, you know, or maybe just digging yourself into a much deeper financial hole. The other possibility is if you're not saving anything, you're living on the savings that you already have. If you're spending more than you make, you know, savings is going to make up that difference until it's gone. So either way, you know, neither one is treading water, let's put it that way. So, you know, really important to be putting money away. There are multiple goals that we need to be saving for. The rainy day fund for unplanned expenses, but also the longer term goals like retirement or things like future education for children, grandchildren, even the down payment on that home you plan to buy in a few years.
Now, you've been exploring this data for a long enough time to know what's the mindset here. Why can't we get this right?
Because people get the order wrong. They spend first and try to save what's left over. And what happens is too often you get to the end of the month and nothing's left over. Even when there is, there's no consistency to it. It bounces around every month. One month you get some left over, next month you don't have any. And you've got to flip that equation around. Successful savers are all about those they've established the habit. They pay themselves first. And the easiest way to make that happen is to automate it. Set up a direct deposit from your paycheck into a dedicated savings account. utilize payroll deduction to fund your 401k or workplace retirement plan. Set up an automatic transfer from your checking account into an IRA. Make the savings happen automatically without you having to think about it, and make saving the first priority, living on what's left after that.
When it's simple these days, right? I mean, you can just do it all from your computer. You're really out of excuses. We're speaking with Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. They've got a new survey that finds one in five Americans is not saving one thin dime. What about by generation? Are the younger folks getting this more than some of the older folks, or vice versa?
Well, and the younger folks, millennials and those in Gen X, which, I mean, let's face it, those are the years where your expenses tend to increase faster than your ability to save, and the numbers reflect that. Millennials and Gen X had a highest propensity of either not saving at all, or if they were, they were saving less than 10% of their incomes. By contrast, baby boomers had a higher incidence of not only saving money, but most likely they were saving more than 10% of their incomes. And so I think what this really illustrates is the importance of prioritizing savings. You know, millennials, more so than any other generation, said that the reason they weren't saving is that they hadn't gotten around to it, which really speaks to the benefit of automating it. That way you don't have to get around to it. It happens automatically.
Thanks, Greg. Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
It's no secret around here. I like things my way. My way keeps our customers happy. My way keeps us on budget. My way keeps this place running. And my way means ordering from Grainger. They've got what we need when we need it. With simplified checkout, dedicated customer reps, and knowledgeable product experts, I can order online, on the phone, or at a branch the way I like it. My way. When it comes to effortless ordering, Grainger's got your back. Call, clickgrainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Glad you're with us. More American teens and young adults appear to be struggling with mental health issues. A new study found the percentage of teens and young adults with depression, anxiety, and other mental health issues has increased sharply over the past decade. While the researchers didn't study the reasons behind the trend, they do have some theories. Study author Jean Twenge, a psychology professor at San Diego State, told CBS News that shifting cultural trends over the past decade, including increased use of electronic communications and digital media, may have had a larger effect on mood disorders among younger generations compared with older ones. She says recently there's been a number of studies showing that those who spend more time on digital media are more likely to be depressed and unhappy. The researchers found the rate of adolescents reporting symptoms consistent with major depression rose from 8.7% in 2005 to 13.2% in 2017. Similar stats for those ages 18 to 25. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, attacks on two Christchurch, New Zealand mosques have left at least 49 dead, with one gunman identified as an Australian extremist apparently live streaming the assault. Witnesses spoke of victims being shot at close range, with women and children also believed to be among those killed. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says the terrorist attack marks one of New Zealand's darkest days. National Police Commissioner Mike Bush says not much is known yet about the attackers.
No agency had any information about these people. And I can also tell you that I've been in contact with my Australian colleagues. They have no information on them at all either.
Several dozen other people were seriously injured. The powerful late winter storm, cited by meteorologists as a bomb cyclone, left blizzards, floods, and tornadoes in its wake after hitting mountain and plain states before pushing east into the Midwest and the Great Lakes region early today. Iowa and Nebraska have issued disaster proclamations due to flooding, while 13 tornadoes were reported in Kentucky. Don Fremd is assistant fire chief in Genesee Township, Kentucky.
We have roofs ripped completely off two or three different trailers. We got trees twisted, tops are ripped right off. there's heavy damage throughout the trailer park.
Mountain regions of Colorado got 2 feet of snow, forcing the cancellation of thousands of flights in Denver and leading to more than 1,000 motorists trapped on roadsides. Britain's parliament has voted to seek a delay of the country's departure from the European Union, a move that will likely avert a chaotic withdrawal on the scheduled exit date of March 29th. With Brexit due in 15 days and no divorce deal yet approved, the House of Commons voted to ask the bloc to postpone Britain's exit until at least June 30th. Power to approve or reject the extension lies with the EU. And deep sea explorers recently discovered the USS Hornet in the South Pacific, but that wasn't the only thing they found. They also discovered the World War II aircraft carrier USS Wasp, 2.5 miles under the sea. The Wasp was part of the 1942 air and sea battle for the strategic South Pacific island of Guadalcanal. The Wasp had been lost for almost 77 years.
It's just, I don't know, incomprehensible.
You're speechless.
To think 2.5 miles down and lost this long. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. A 6-year-old piano prodigy from Dayton, Ohio, is going viral with his ability to play, not only because he's exceptionally good, but because he's blind. Avit Ray Manis taught himself to play by ear. His mother told CBS News that the moment he could pull himself to reach the piano, he was playing the melody to Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. That was when he was just 11 months old. He's since gotten a piano teacher, followed by requests to perform. Avit Ray loves to perform songs from Queen and the Turtles. The movie Bohemian Rhapsody intrigued him, and he did his own cover of the title song. It's his latest video to go viral. One of his upcoming events includes a performance for a Ronald McDonald House fundraiser next month. He also performed for the entire faculty and staff of Centerville, Ohio schools. 900 people were there. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.